Shavuos, Perek Zayin, Mishnah Dalet, 7-4, and the fourth of those five scenarios in which the rabbi said a person could take a shavua as the tovea, as the plaintiff, and collect. And that is, v'shekenegdo chashud ala shavua, a person who is taking someone to Bezdin, and the defendant would have to make a shavua, because let's say there's an Eid Echad, one witness, or he's motiv miktsas, but he can't because the Bezdin will not accept a shavua, they don't trust him to be honest. So then, the point of our Mishnah here is that in a situation in which the defendant isn't allowed or isn't accepted to take a shvua, because we don't trust him, so then the plaintiff, the tovea, can instead take the shvua and collect. Okay? Now, the Mishnah is going to list a couple different categories of people who are not believed, not able to take a shvua, and then it will give the punchline at the end of that kind of list. It'll say those people can't take a shvua, and therefore the plaintiff should take a shvua instead and collect. Now, we're going to get bogged down a little bit in the details here of who these people are. So there are basically, I'm going to be, let's call it three categories. Category number one is people who have been shown in the past to swear falsely. If they've sworn falsely, or even if they've shown they don't respect the institution of oaths, shvuos, so then the Bezdin will accept a shvua, and then he'll be in this predicament. The second category of people who are not eligible to give testimony in general because they're what's called a rasha, meaning that really means either A, they've been convicted of some crime for which the punishment is malchus, lashes midoraisa, or otherwise they've been convicted, you know, of confirmed to be guilty of some financial crime, like they stole or they charged interest and the like. Now, those people are going to be not eligible midoraisa to act as witnesses in any kind of court case, as edim, and that's being extended here to also not being believed to be taking an oath that's believed by the Bezdin. There's a discussion of that's a midoraisa derabbanan. The pasuk that restricts rishayim, wicked people, from acting as witnesses, that says, al tashes yadcha im rasha leyos eid chamas, which means you can't extend the possibility of a wicked person to serve as like a corrupt witness. So that's the Rasha. The question is, does that extend also midoraisa, just the Rabbanan, to taking a shvua in general? Okay, that's a discussion. In any case, at all events, they can't take a shvua. That category isn't mentioned explicitly in our Mishnah at all. The third category is people who are considered to be also Rishayim midorabbanan, and therefore they can't take, they can't serve as witnesses in courts, as edim, and therefore they're also not be allowed to give their word in a shvua and be believed. Now, this that latter list, we've actually seen that list elsewhere, in Maseches Sanhedrin and in Maseches Rosh Hashanah, both those places, it says these people are not able to give a testimony. We'll see them inside in just a moment. So the Mishnah says, for starters, v'shekenegdo chashdo la shvua keitzar, what's the scenario? So for example, achas shvuas ha'edus v'achas shvuas ha'pikadon. If a person has been shown to be a liar, whether we're talking about shvuas ha'edus, that was the topic you recall of our fourth parak, that he suppresses no testimony, claiming he doesn't know when he does know, and he then later on fesses up he's a liar or shown to be a liar, or achas shvuas pikadon, that's he's also denying some kind of financial claim, later on he shows he was lying at that time and has to, you know, bring that Hashem Gazelis in the story. Vafilo shvua shav, says the Mishnah, even someone who just has taken a shvua shav, a shvua for no good reason, either because it's something which is apparently obvious, true or false, or something which is impossible or can I get the Torah. So those are also showing that he doesn't respect the institution of shvuas and therefore he's not going to be afforded the opportunity to make a shvua now. If you recall, in the middle prakim of this Masechta, we had four categories of self-initiated shvuas. These were three of them. The fourth one was shvuas bitui, a person who swears about the truth of something, whether talking about the past or the future. Now, the reason why the Mishnah doesn't say that here ostensibly is because if one's lying about the past, he says yesterday he didn't or did do something, he's a liar, and that guy too would not be allowed to take a shvua again in the context of this Mishnah. However, when one takes a shvua about the future, he says, I'm not going to drink wine tomorrow, or I am going to drink wine tomorrow for that matter. So then, if in the end he violates his shvua, that's not necessarily because he's a liar, just because he could be that, you know, he's a baltaiva, or he forgot whatever the story is, and it's a baltaiva, so that's not considered to be someone who's a liar. And therefore, it depends. For shvua bitui, if one's swearing about the past and he's lying, then he wouldn't be allowed to give a shvua here in a court case as a defendant and not pay either. Okay? Now, the Mishnah lapses talk about the category, the four people who are Asar Medarabanan. This list, like I said before, is in Sanhedrin and in Rosh Hashanah. Haya Echad Mehen Mesachik Bekubia. If the defendant is a Mesachik Bekubia, that means he plays with dice. Already from the antiquity, they had these knuckle bones. They're sort of like kubia, like the English word cube. They're cubical in nature. They're basically gambling. So a gambler is not allowed to take a to be an aid and also not give a shvua. The two reasons advance the Gemara, either because as a gambler, they essentially are inum oskim b'shuva shel olam. They're not involved in the development of the world. They haven't got a stake in normal society. They're outsiders, and therefore they don't respect the norms of society. They don't care if, you know, the world goes to hell in a handbasket because they don't require the functioning of the economy in order to make a living. So therefore we don't trust them. They've got, you know, skin in the game. The other approach is that they're like rabbinic thieves, the idea being that since the person who's betting against them thinks he's going to not lose, he doesn't really agree, didn't want to give up his money, but sort of social pressure forced him to hand over the money. So that's called like a smachta. He made a commitment that he didn't really want to do, and therefore he like is sort of being pressured into giving up some money, kind of like, therefore he's being stolen from. Therefore, according to that upshot, the gambler is like a thief light. The nafkamina would be, of course, if you hold that it's in a, if it's that he's not invested in the yishuv sha'olam, he's not of the development of the world. So a person who has a regular day job but gambles at night or on the weekends, whatever, would be believed. Whereas someone who's considered to be, if the issue is like the rabbinic theft, then any time would be a problem. The second of the four is of the rabbinic people who can't is umalva baribis, a person who lends at interest. Pashas here, we're talking about someone who lends at interest midarabanan, therefore he's not a rasha. So kind of rabbinic, although hosts of rabbinic prohibitions in terms of lending at interest. There are those who learn, however, that anyways, it's even if he's lending at ribis midaraisa, it's different because the borrower is agreeable to it, so it could be different. And he's not a rasha, therefore, necessarily on the same level. Okay, then you've got mafriche yonim. That means pigeon chasers, two pshatim here. Either it means like racing pigeons, kind of like you race horses. This is pigeon racing. That would make it basically the same thing as the gambler before. Therefore, others learn, the two pshatim in the Gemara, that it's talking about someone who trains his pigeons to lure other people's pigeons away from where they roost on their fellow's property. The idea being that people essentially cultivated, they reared doves, pigeons, for a host of purposes, you know, for fertilizer, as communications, for their eggs, for the meat, etc. So people raise these, you know, these pigeons and doves. The thing is, though, they didn't, how do they do it? Essentially, basically the same way that they do today in the Hula Valley, put out food and the birds come. So you basically make a big bird hotel, columbarium it's called, the fancy term, and you basically put some bird seeds and the birds come and make your, you know, your backyard home for themselves. So since that person didn't really make a kin on the birds, they don't really belong to him. So when someone else lures the birds away, they're not really luring away someone else's birds. The birds are kind of ownerless. But the victim sure feels like he's being cheated, and Chazal recognized that's sort of like cheating with the Rabbanan, like stealing with the Rabbanan, and therefore that person's also suspect as being like a crook, and therefore not trusted. See, the theme with all these things is that they're sort of, their morals, they have a sort of moral turpitude. Their morals are perverse in terms of profit, personal profit. Therefore, afraid the person's going to lie also for the sake of personal profit, not to lose. And finally, v'sochrei shvias, the fourth category is the same thing again. Someone who does commercial activity with Shemitah produce. So the Pasuk, in talking about Shemitah produce, says, v'haisa shavas ha'aretz lachem la'achla. The produce should rest and you should, it should be there for you to eat. But the drush is la'achla, you can eat the produce, but below the schora, but you can't do commercial activity with it, and that restricts the activities of what one can do with produce that grew in the Shemitah year. This is not talking about working the fields, it's just actually doing commercial activity with what grows by itself. Every year the dates can grow on the trees, whether you, that's how it works in the Shemitah year and so on. But a guy who does that against the rules, and he's sort of doing commerce with these dates that grew, let's say, whatever they were, the Shemitah produce. So this guy obviously is money hungry, and we don't trust people who are money hungry to swear. So that's that. In all those cases, Shekinegdo Nishba, the opposite person, meaning the plaintiff here, will be able to take a shvua instead and collect, since the defendant isn't able to take a shvua. That's the first part of the Mishnah. Now, the second part of the Mishnah just is an interesting what if. What if Hayushnein Chashudin? What if both the plaintiff and defendant are both suspect to the point that the Bezim won't allow them to swear? So now, the defendant can't swear to stave off the claim, but the plaintiff can't swear now to collect on the claim. So now, what's supposed to happen? So, says the Mishnah, Chazar Shvua limkoma divrei Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi says, so then the shvul goes back to its place. Now, what is that supposed to mean? So the Gemara gives two separate pshatim. Either it means now we're back to the defendant has to take a shvul, but he can't, and therefore he'll have to pay. And that's what the Rambam learns. And the other approach is that, listen, since the Bezin can't get anyone to take a shvua, this kind of the ball is now in Hashem's court. Everyone swore they're supposed to pay themselves at Har Sinai. They're not. And therefore, the Bezin says, listen, you know, pox on both your houses. We're not dealing with this. No one's collecting anything. And therefore, it's sort of stalemate, and the money stays wherever it is. That is the two approaches in Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Meir Omer, Yachaloku. Rabbi Omer says, no, the fair thing to do is actually to split the difference and then, you know, pay half the claim. Okay, since no one can take a shvua, we pay half the claim. That's Rabbi Meir Shita. And the Gemara ended up saying that the Shita should be switched around, meaning that actually the latter opinion of Yachlok was Rabbi Yossi, and the former of Chazar Shua Limkoma is Rabbi Meir. Be that as it may, the Rishonim are split on what the halacha is. The Rambam, like I said before, and the Shulchan Aruch goes like him, says, therefore, since the defendant can't swear, he has to pay. But the Ramah Paskins, that Yachlok, they would split the difference and pay half of the claim.